People who've interacted with a psychopath. What made you realize they were one? Story 1. I've worked with teenagers my entire career, and I'm fairly well versed in how mental health struggles can show up with middle and high school kids. We had one kid, let's call him Evan, not his real name. I generally understand why kids are popular, but this kid confused me. He wasn't charismatic in the hallway, he wasn't a party kid, he wasn't athletic, he wasn't funny, and he certainly wasn't kind. This kid always had fanfare and would pick out one other male peer and essentially overwhelm them with attention. He built emotional bonds with them and then totally used it for his benefit. He would pick a teacher and constantly torment them. For example, for creative writing, he wrote about how a character in his story named Kevin, again, not real but very close, had gone to a teacher's house that happened to have a dog like the teacher had. And he wrote in disturbing detail about how he mistreated it. Not killing it, but harming it. He'd change details just enough and say he was mimicking Vonnegut or something like that. When he got disciplined for it, he had the current favored male peer talk sense into the teacher. Yeah, this friend ended up getting suspended because that talking sense was actually threats to protect Evan. When the friend came back from suspension, his mom asked everyone to try to keep him away from Evan. Evan got in no trouble because he pretended he didn't think this friend would get aggressive, but clearly he did. It was constant, and eventually he was placed in my class. He tried the essay tactic again to scare the teacher. He wrote about how a character, not named Evan but something very close, knew where a teacher that sounded like me lived and was planning on burning my house down with my entire family in it. The next day I read it out loud to the class and asked them to give him feedback all together during class. He didn't like that at all, especially because the girls who knew nothing of this drama before were horrified. They deemed him a creep that they didn't like. He ended up moving the next year, and he is an adult now. Every now and then I Google his name because I truly don't know what damage a person who operates that effectively can do. Story 2. Teacher here, and I also taught a student with psychopathic traits. This particular one overwhelmed teachers with charm while tormenting his peers. However, once the teachers got to know him, they absolutely disliked him. Even the empathetic teachers who always stood up for troubled kids would unequivocally say he was a horrible person. I was shocked to hear them say that, because he seemed so nice when I first taught him and was a leader in the classroom. My first sign something was wrong was when none of the girls liked him. He was a mature-looking, handsome, well-developed middle school boy who seemed exactly like the kind of guy they'd all have crushes on, but they all hated him and got uncomfortable when they had to work with him. I found out he was subtly whispering nasty things to them and even physically hurting them anytime he could make it look like an accident. Then we found out that he had volunteered to help out in younger classrooms, like K-2, so he could physically hurt those kids when nobody was looking. He was cool and calm about these things, never showing any remorse. Then he became obsessed with the military, saying he hoped to join so he could kill people. He never seemed angry or depressed when he said these things, but chillingly calm and cruel. His eyes would light up and he'd smile, but there was just nothing there. His adoptive parents were called in for a conference, and they said they were scared of him. They even sent him to a boarding school the next year because of how frightened they were. I've taught a lot of troubled students, even some who don't seem to have consciences and don't feel guilty about hurting others. This guy was in a league by himself, though. He was definitely the type of kid who gave off the impression of future danger, while even the worst troubled kids I've worked with were probably just on the level of being unpleasant members of society. Story 3. I met a woman at a party who gave me this kind of chilling suspicion. She was sociable and easily commanded the attention of every small gathering she was in. She leaned on the complaints about her job to keep the conversation about her. She was a nurse working in the maternity ward, and she went on about the hours and the pay and everything. To change the vibe, I asked her what she liked about her job, and she lit up. But what she said didn't come down to her coworkers, or helping people, or making a difference. Her answer amounted to power. She absolutely glowed as she described how fragile new mothers are, and how many subtle things could go wrong. She was proud to say how she knew when a mother wasn't going to make it through the night without complications, and how she was the only nurse on the floor who could help the mother. She loved how she was in control over a precious and delicate thing that that could not be replaced. I remember feeling deeply uncomfortable by her answer and that smile of hers. I still remember that smile. Others around us at the time picked up on it too. Story 4. I used to work for one. Every sincere, vulnerable moment was fabricated to prompt me to share my story so he could collect information to use against me. He used to get upset that he was so open with me, and I was like a brick wall. "Sir, I'm at work." He told me he used to live in London, that his marriage was open and he was lining up dates on his business trips, that he used to be romantically involved with his last assistant when they would travel together, that he kept his parents on payroll to help them out, etc. None of it was true except him having blatant affairs. He would name drop people of influence, saying so-and-so was an old friend, just compulsively lying to make himself seem important. He would fabricate dramatic situations that were my fault, so he would have an excuse to scream literally at me, like wording a phrase just wrong enough that I would misstep. His eyes would go absolutely black. I started questioning when I met someone close to him in his personal life and asked, "Oh, was that when he lived in the UK? Insert confused expression. I got coffee with his former assistant, and she told me she had never traveled with him, let alone had an affair with him. It was all a lie. I screenshotted him making really obscene Sewell comments toward me on Slack. Still not sure what to do with it all. Obviously, I don't work for him anymore. To say I had PTSD would be dramatic, but the emotional whiplash of someone being manipulative and having power over you left me scarred in unexpected ways for a long time. Now I just see him as a tiny piece of garbage. Story 5. I fell in love with this guy who did a lot of extreme sports, dangerous stuff, all the time. I went through a seriously traumatic event when I was on my way to meet him for vacation. He had been so charming and made a lot of grand romantic gestures back then. He impulsively got us tickets to a cruise. I got to town a day before him to visit family. I went out with friends the night before he arrived, and things went very wrong. When he got off the plane, he found out that I had been attacked. Instead of coming to me at the police station, he told me I should have fought harder and that I had ruined his vacation. He went on the cruise without me. He went straight to the ship and didn't even bother to see me. It broke my heart at one of the lowest moments of my life. When we got to talk about it later, I told him I had noticed his lack of empathy, thrill-seeking, and impulsive behavior. I had also noticed that he was always happy. He looked at me without a mask for a moment and told me I was very observant. It was chilling. He could move so easily from this charming guy who seemed almost selfless to someone I didn't recognize. Story 6. I work in a prison and have dealt with people officially diagnosed with psychopathy. The best way I can describe it, and keep in mind, this is coming from someone who knew what they were walking into. There is something missing in their brain. You can see it in their eyes that there is a void behind them. And when they talk to you, it's just a big game. I'm not just talking about a lack of empathy, which it is, but an emptiness that is not natural. Inmates play games, lies, manipulation, pretending to be clueless to test what you know. It's part of their world. But with those individuals, there is a lot more calculation and measuring in their interactions with you that just doesn't exist with regular inmates. It's like they are constantly sizing you up, and you have to be very aware of what they are doing and just go along with it, sticking to policy, procedure, and your job. They love control, and they are always trying to take some of it from you. The key is to never allow it. Story 7. After high school, I moved to Modesto, California. Met a lot of cool people, and it was a life-changing experience. Through a mutual friend, I met this guy and his roommate who needed another roommate. Everyone was really cool. All his friends and family were cool, but no one told me about this guy. We'd cruise McHenry on weekends, smoke, go to parties, fun young adult stuff. His father was a pastor, so he grew up knowing the Bible. He was also really good at reading people. At first, I thought he was cool because I could also read people. I thought he used that gift to help others, but I later learned he was manipulating them with it. At first, it seemed like he did it to help people, but also to get them to believe in God. He would talk about being a good person and the Bible and such. His friends would hang out, and we'd talk religion and life. But one day, when he wanted to do a group prayer, his two friends got on their knees in front of him as he sat in his recliner. They bowed their heads, and he said a prayer. I thought it was really weird, but I didn't say anything. I didn't join either. He asked.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Asked why, and I just said I wasn't comfortable with it. That's when things started changing. He didn't like not having control over someone. I didn't know he tried this with everyone until he and I took a 3-day job in Oakland. He angered a lot of people trying to manipulate them. I tried talking to him about it and told him he wasn't the only person who could read people. So I did a read on him and told him what he was doing and how wrong it was. People who believed in him had his back and always looked out for him, but he was using them for personal gain. People thought he was the next Messiah for how well he could read them and tell them how they felt and thought. When we got back to Modesto, he wanted me gone. I didn't even see it coming. All these people just showed up and he went nuts. He had a prayer session and said if I didn't bow to him and ask for forgiveness, he was going to keep my stuff, call the cops, and get me kicked out. I wasn't on the lease. So I said, just give me my stuff and I'll go. I didn't have much, by the way. They bowed to him, he said a prayer, and then told them I was of evil and needed to be dealt with. He pointed at the floor transition and told his bodybuilder follower if I crossed it to beat me up while he went through my things. As this was happening, like 15 people showed up, some of them his family. I was thinking, man, I'm going to get Mansoned. He gave me my stuff and told me to leave, then said to his people, notice how he didn't cross the line in the name of God, because he is of evil. They all agreed. I said I didn't cross the line because he threatened me, not because of religion. Everyone followed me outside to the parking lot where he kept saying crazy stuff about me being evil. I told him in front of everyone he was nuts like Charles Manson, manipulating people for personal gain and ego. I looked his bodybuilder friend in the eye and asked, you believe in this guy? What if he wants you to hurt someone next just because they won't bow to him? What kind of Christian acts like that? I said more, but I can't remember it all. He went nuts, took a pole lying on the ground, and was going to hit me with it. I just stood there and said, do it. You'll go to prison, maybe even share a cell with Manson himself. I asked, this is your Messiah? Can't think for yourselves? He didn't do anything but run back up to his apartment when everyone stood up for me at that point. His brother said, thank you, man. I've been waiting for someone to shut him down for years. Apparently, no one had been capable of intellectually shutting this guy down. It felt like being in the Twilight Zone. How could people not see what he was? If it wasn't for that night, they'd probably still be bowing to this guy or already drinking the Kool-Aid or something. Crazy. That was my last night in California. I can't forget the look in that guy's eyes when he knew he had power over someone when they bowed to him. It was like it turned him on or something. Story 8. I didn't realize he was one at first. We actually dated for 3 months, and I thought he might have high-functioning autism or something. Like, I noticed he reacted to things differently. He was really cute, and we had a lot of the same hobbies. He liked to climb, so I kind of ignored it. But the longer we were together, I noticed little things, like how he would pretend when he thought he was supposed to be upset about something. He knew it was an upsetting thing, but only when he realized I or other people noticed would he have tears or act sad. He hit a wolf one time when we were on the way to a camping spot in northern Idaho. That was when I really saw it. He took a life and didn't even react. I know some people just don't think animals are important, but he didn't even swerve the car or show any emotion. He said it should have known better than to cross the road. And I cried because, to me, hitting a wolf was traumatic, and I wasn't even the one driving. They are beautiful creatures, and he looked right at me, stone cold, and said, you are ruining my weekend by crying. I need you to stop right now. I broke up with him as soon as we got home. I was too afraid to do it in the woods. Story 9. I dated a guy like this. I thought he had high-functioning autism as well, but I was wrong, and I apologize to people with autism for thinking that, as they are some of the most thoughtful people I've met in my life. I was with him long enough to see a few different examples. I caught him practicing facial expressions in the mirror a few times, which was odd, But the most disturbing time was when he was reenacting almost verbatim our conversation from earlier in the day. I had told him a friend of mine might have breast cancer, and I was really worried. He was quietly repeating the lines we had exchanged, mostly focusing on pretending to be me. He was very frustratedly confused about my dog. Jealous even? It's the only way I can describe how he acted when I had to leave to take care of her, talked about her, or interacted with her when he came over. Twice he felt comfortable enough to ask me why I would invest in an animal that doesn't add value or benefit my life in a practical way. It's a waste of time and money. When I explained that I loved her and that her existence was valuable for its own sake, it didn't make sense to him. My dog wasn't affectionate to him like she was with everyone else, but she wasn't afraid or aggressive toward him either. Still, I kept an eye out. He had grown up with a family dog and never experienced a dog attack. We were walking down the street one evening to get dinner when we came upon a bad accident. A bike courier had been hit by a car. The groceries they'd been delivering were scattered on the ground in the middle of a pool of blood, and the courier was still lying there while paramedics worked on them. It was extremely shocking and sad, to say the least. People around us were crying and praying, and because the police had blocked off the entire intersection, we had to turn around and walk a different way to the restaurant. I remember this next interaction vividly, and it scares me to this day. I had openly expressed worry, sadness, fear, and hope for the person on the ground. But in a very deadpan tone, my ex coldly stated how incredibly inconvenient it was that we now had to reroute to the restaurant, even going so far as to say he didn't understand why. Everyone's this upset about something that's at most really annoying. It's not like they know him. I looked at him in disbelief, expecting him to at least look angry, which would have been bad enough. Instead, he turned to look me in the eyes, and I saw the most empty expression I had ever seen on a person. It made my blood run cold, like every survival alarm inside me went off at once. The sheer indifference and lack of empathy was so palpable, and I think he knew that I had seen through him, because he finally looked upset. Only it was toward me. He told me I better not let this ruin our evening, grabbed my hand, and basically dragged me to the restaurant. These were the most damning moments. We broke up after the accident. But there were lots of little things I could add to the list that make sense in hindsight. However, I think it's important to end on how extremely normal, even charming, their behavior is 99% of the time. Even if you've just met them and they seem off to you, you don't really have evidence to support it until they say or do something wrong, which usually happens after you're already well within their circle of influence. And if you're close enough to them to see or experience troubling behavior, you're more likely to dismiss it as just a quirk of theirs or a miscommunication or misunderstanding on your part and give them the benefit of the doubt. Because up until that point, they've been nothing but normal, funny, nice, cool, even generous to you. They're just a little weird or particular. Storytelling. This person hasn't been diagnosed, but I strongly suspect she is. She can be very charming on the surface, good at drawing people in, and very believable when spinning a story to get people to side with her. She has a very limited emotional range. It's just fake happiness, just contentment and rage. There is nothing in between. She can also fake cry on command, which I find very disturbing. She does it to the cops whenever her partner and she have had a domestic dispute. I usually believe most women when they say they are victims, but not her. She is cunning and calculating. She has gotten away with her behavior her whole life, and I don't see it changing. She knows how to manipulate people into bowing to her demands, and if they don't, she flies into a rage and tries to physically harm them. Also, if you don't side with her, you're against her, and she will launch a campaign to smear your name and reputation. Story 11. My mother, she's very good at hiding who she really is. Very charming, smart, and pretty. Appearances are the most important thing to her. I'm her oldest child, so I was the one that got the most mistreatment. We are three daughters, all smart, never got into trouble, never did drugs. Yet she loved to make up stories about us to other adults about how bad we were, right in front of us. Honestly, I don't know why. Wouldn't you want people to know your kids are great? It got to the point where we would call her out to her face while she was saying these stories. She also hates my husband just because we are high school sweethearts, and I quote, He's a lower class than we are. She's all sweet around extended family, and no one really sees who she truly is. We are low contact now because of her hatred of my husband and the terrible things she's done to him. I've started to tell a select few extended family members who she really is. I'm tired of everyone telling me how amazing my mother is. No, she is not. If she wasn't married to my dad, I would never speak to her again. I know this is late to the thread, but it felt good to get it out there. Story 12. Extremely manipulative, everything self-serving, but he could spin a story any way to get what he wanted and have people be very loyal to him. He was smart and could adapt and play almost anything to his favor. Looking back, I think it was the only thing that really excited him. He lied constantly, like it was a game to him, even about mundane stuff. He would lie to create drama or pity for himself when needed. This guy flew women in from all over the world, telling each one he was in love with them. He dropped one at the airport and would swing around to the next gate to pick up another. He loved getting women to trust him, and it was a victory for him to get someone to leave their partner. He would throw people away like they were nothing afterward. His entire life was a lie, and I'm sure he's still causing chaos in the lives of others, particularly brunette women. Story 13, former manager. I realized that he would literally work me to death, and his only problem with that would be finding a replacement. 17 people in that company left within 6 months of him joining. People were crying at their desks. He implemented a ban on the dev team communicating with the marketing team. He secretly had our IT systems modified so he could read our emails and use that to attack us. Imagine feeling like someone's knee is on your throat all day, every day. That struggle to breathe. The weight crushing you. Several of us developed anxiety and depression as a result of working under him. There was a time after a group of us had quit that we started discussing retaliation. Nobody said the actual words, but we all knew what we meant. Even though I very much wanted retaliation too, I convinced them that our best retaliation was to move on and be successful. As it happens, 13 years later, I'm working with two of the same guys, and we're absolutely thriving in a great place with great conditions. But I still have to convince myself not to find him and retaliate. Story 14. Years and years ago, when I was in my early 20s dating casually, I met up with a guy who was a highway patrol police officer. He had previously worked in intelligence for the Air Force and was telling me various stories, but what got me was his story about his favorite thing to do at his current job. He told me his favorite shift was the morning shift because it was during peak work traffic. He loved to look out for people who he could tell were in a rush. They weren't breaking the law or speeding per se, but he said he could just tell they were running late or had something important going on. He would pull them over and take as long as possible to run all their information, dragging it out and creating more stress for them. He had the widest smile, and his eyes looked manic as he told me this. He finished it off with something like, "Yeah, just knowing I've completely ruined someone's entire day brings me more joy than anything I ever did in the Air Force." A tiny example, but I'll never forget it. Story 15. My son. From day one, he was incredibly difficult. He never really had specific cries for things like my other children, so I was always guessing what he needed. His sleep was terrible, so my sleep was terrible. He was impossible to teach. He loved to throw toys, so I made a consequence that any toy thrown would go into timeout. They went in a clear bin, my thinking being that a normal 3 to 4 year old would hate losing his favorite toys and stop throwing them. Nope, it wasn't even hard to earn them back. I can't recall specifics, but things like getting dressed on time in the morning, brushing teeth, etc. He just didn't care. Then he started tormenting animals, but carefully, and his cruelty was always so deliberate that there was never any proof. He was brilliant, reading biology textbooks at 10, that kind of thing. I took him to therapy. I asked for help from the state. I tried to find ways to have him committed, but there was literally nothing I could do. There was one private hospital I found that could take him and wasn't one of those questionable abusive ranches, but they charged 4 times our annual gross income. His dad and I separated so we could keep the kids in separate homes at all times, protecting his siblings as much as we could, though we later found out it was too little, too late. Eventually, his siblings reported their abuse in a way that could be prosecuted, and with enough documentation from the school, he went to juvenile detention. I relinquished my parental rights to the state and got restraining orders for the whole household, including the kids too scared to report. It's a horrific thing for a family, and there really isn't any support in the U.S. for those who have to survive it. Story 16. Their eyes were dead. The first night I met her, I told my friends, she's got dead cow eyes. They thought it was funny, but didn't really understand what I meant. What I meant was that she was a sociopath. I could tell, very obviously somehow. She then entrapped one of my best friends and to this day ruins his life over and over, but he still takes her back. She has no shame. She did antisocial things without considering the consequences. She victimized people and couldn't tell she was doing it because it felt normal to her. She went to prison. She did hard drugs and drank through a pregnancy. She would capture men and then use them until they weren't of use anymore. She cheated constantly. My friend is like a shell of a person. They divorced, but still get back together frequently. She just uses him up for money and support until she gets bored, and then moves in with someone else. When they get sick of her, she goes back to my friend again. It's sick. Being in the same room with her is like knowing there's a cobra crawling around, but not knowing exactly where. People like that will give you the creeps. Story 17. I used to work across the road from a state mental health hospital at a big box store. They treated all kinds of illness, including psychopathy and criminally insane patients. Those who were allowed, due to having a day pass or whatever it was called, would come either on their own, rare, or with caseworkers to do shopping. This didn't include prisoners, obviously, but sometimes we get patients who were just off. So I've interacted with a few. For me, the usual giveaway was the sticker name tag, Lowell, but there were some who didn't wear them or who escaped and wandered over on their own. For me, it was their laugh. They actually tended to laugh a lot, but only at things they themselves had said or caused. And then it was an almost naughty child snicker, like they thought they were the cleverest person in the room. I can't say if this was a medication side effect, because I assume all those I interacted with were medicated, but that's how I could tell. Another thing was, they seemed to have a momentary delay in replying to things, like they were referring to a script or buffering. Again, maybe a medication side effect causing delayed cognitive processing, but it was a tell for me. Usually I'd notice these signs and then their caseworker would pop up to direct them back across the road. Story 18. I was raised by one, a sadistic monster. Not only was he deeply disturbed, with friends just like him, his degree was in film and video production, but he was also a master at manipulation and true gaslighting. Strangulation and drowning were used as forms of discipline. He had the shark eyes people talk about with psychopathic people, and he definitely was only happy when me, my mother, or my little sister were sad or terrified. He ruined things for the fun of it, made me think I was crazy and a bad daughter, to the point that my first genuine suicide attempt was at 6 years old. But it was the 90s, and my mother just dealt with it for years because she was an alcoholic. She was so used to the violence and fear and chance of dying from him before I was even born that she couldn't leave. Now, I legitimately have that disorder everyone on TikTok thinks is trendy to play dress up and pretend, but it's nothing like that. It's ruining my adult life. I could write a full dissertation about the man, my father, who ruined my life. I'm 35 now and attend trauma therapy 3 days a week. I am still panic attack level, afraid of the dumbest things, and I hate myself because he took any bit of self-esteem or self-worth I could have developed as a child. He essentially programmed my brain to self-destruct. I am not allowed to love or even like myself. I don't know how to trust or feel safe. I feel like a lost child 80% of the time. It's so messed up. The American court system failed me too when I finally reported in my 20s. They said, "Look at all the times she tried to hurt herself as a kid." His lawyer used the fact that he had made me genuinely want an attempt to end my life regularly from age 6 to 20 as proof that I was lying. Okay, I'm done. Sorry, this one is incredibly personal for me. And in case you're wondering, he was bailed out on $500,000 by his very wealthy sister. 1 year into being incarcerated, he walked free and still is to this day. People like him are absolutely the closest thing to actual demons walking this earth. Story 19. My aunt. Growing up with her, it was just, "Oh, that's just Aunt R." I didn't realize that my instinct to never believe her was because she was a dangerous psychopath, narcissist. She would tell you to come, give her a hug because you've got her blood running through your veins. But you could feel that she didn't actually love you. She just wanted to reinforce that family connection. Nothing ever felt genuine from her. She was always only halfway interested in anything. Then I noticed that my cousins were always made to stay in their rooms and play quietly. She was always so rude to waitstaff and customer service people. I hated being out in public with her. And why was my 8-year-old cousin teaching me to pluck my eyebrows the way her mom taught her? Because my aunt told her she was ugly and needed to fix her unibrow if she was ever going to catch a man at 8 years old. When I was in high school, she disappeared. We thought her husband killed her. She popped back up again in California a week or two later with some biker guys she knew from high school. She came back for her youngest child and to sign divorce papers, then went back to California with her son for maybe 6 months before the guy got sick of her and sent them both back. Apparently it was pretty bad. My cousin was very young, but said it was an outlaw group, and he was basically left to his own devices while his mom partied. There were lots of small, awful things she did, like shutting her car door on my other aunt's dog and killing it. But the next truly awful thing was ignoring the signs of abuse on a little girl she babysat, who was later murdered by her abuser. This was about a decade after the California incident. She had remarried, and her husband had 2 daughters and 2 granddaughters. She used to babysit the granddaughters. One spring, the mother of both granddaughters started dating a new guy who was on meth. She also started doing meth. He suggested they split childcare duties. She would take care of the older one, and he would take care of the younger one, who was just 2 years old. During the weeks he was caring for her, he was actually doing terrible things that left physical evidence anyone else would have seen. A few weeks later, he murdered her. My aunt told my mom after the fact that she had noticed things like the little girl was missing toenails or had patches of skin missing from duct tape being pulled off, and she didn't think anything of it. Later, she and her husband tried to get custody or visitation rights for the older granddaughter, but the judge was so appalled that my aunt had the opportunity to help and didn't that he denied their request and gave the child's father the discretion to decide visitation. Shortly after, her marriage reached the minimum length of time for equal marital assets. So she filed for divorce and accused her husband of terrible abuse, which was disproven, but she still walked away with a chunk of his retirement. When her oldest child finally went no contact with her, she teamed up with his unstable ex to try to fabricate evidence that my cousin was abusing his daughter. That ended with my aunt receiving censure, my cousin being granted full custody, and his ex's parental rights terminated. The most recent thing I know of is that she burned down her house while her husband was asleep inside. She claimed she was frying Brussels sprouts when supposedly grease caught the curtains on fire. Thank God the smoke alarm woke him up and he made it out. But she burned it down for insurance money. Anyway, that's what a psychopath looks like when they aren't in the news, aren't serial killers, and aren't smart enough to fake normalcy. She's miserable and alone now. She creates fake social media profiles to stalk the family. She uses elderly relatives to guilt people into talking to her. She threatens to destroy people's lives regularly. At funerals, weddings, or parties, we have to hide the details to prevent her from showing up. Occasionally, she tries to send my kids gifts. It's weird. My whole life, the identifying characteristic I've associated with her is that she's performative and empty. There's literally nothing to her other than scheming. No care, no genuine interests or hobbies. Just pure self-interest and nothing else. You can feel the difference. Story 20. My stepdad growing up until that day, I thought he was really nice. That day he surprised me with a puppy, and I was so excited. He hated dogs, so I thought I'd never get to have one. He let me play with it for most of the day. Then when my mom was over at our neighbor's, he sat down with me, acting like he was going to play with it too. Suddenly, he pulled out an ice pick and shoved it right into the puppy's chest. He threw the ice pick into the bushes right behind us, but never took his eyes off my face, with that creepy grin he'd get when he was hurting me in some way, like it was his favorite thing to do, like it was funny or amusing. It was the same look my kids have today when I do an awesome science experiment that fills them with wonder. I can't explain it, but it was so out of context in that moment. It gave off an insect-like vibe, like it was an interesting experiment with no human emotion behind it, just staring at my face, watching how it would make me feel, and enjoying that it horrified me. The puppy gave a quick yelp, and my mom heard it and came running out. He was pretending to be sad, holding the puppy's stomach side down so she couldn't see the puncture. He said, "Oh, I don't know what happened. The poor thing just yelped and died. I guess maybe it had some kind of defect." It was so creepy how fast he could switch that mask back on. We buried it, and while my mom was praying once it was buried, he looked up at me, smiled, and winked. I was about 5, maybe. I have a terrible memory for time. But I instantly knew not to say a word. Somehow, I just felt it deep in my bones. Most of the time, he was good at faking being personable, charming, and friendly. So the contrast was chilling when you were alone with him, and only when he decided to do something cruel. Over the years, who he picked and why he picked them felt so random. But I guess that was the day I realized it, even if I didn't have the word for it until a long time afterward. Story 21. My mother is one. To be honest, for the most part, you won't know they are a psychopath because, on the outside, they are mostly unremarkable and often average. They will be polite and friendly or even outgoing and charming. For the most part, interacting with them feels the same as with anyone else. It took me a long time to understand psychopathy, not the way it's painted on TV or in crime documentaries. You're dealing with someone who is mentally exhausting, and over time it wears you down. My mother has stolen my medication and is a functioning drug addict that no one would ever suspect. But I've seen it behind the scenes. There's this sense of entitlement to continuously exploit your children and steal from them. Imagine having a parent who has zero loyalty to you, constantly making you feel like every interaction is mental chess, always checking if they are scheming against you or putting you in an unsafe situation. You're left wondering if you've upset them, usually for something they did that you're reacting to, by the way. My mother's horrible behavior and abuse was so normalized for me that it took a lot of therapy to see that, yes, every calculated move was intentional. I had to learn how to counteract it or dodge the impact. Now I have to take her to court because my reputation was destroyed by the fraud she committed against me. And you know how well she sleeps at night? Like a baby. Story 22. I started dating this guy. After about 8 months of abuse and exhausting every effort I could make to leave on my own, I finally asked for police help. He responded by kidnapping my dog and sending me videos of him hurting her, breaking her leg, starving her, leaving her locked in a hot car with no water, trying to bait me to come get her. He tormented her for about a month before it finally stopped. The things he did to me were terrifying and horrible, yet they never hurt as much as that. I don't know how he did it, but if I changed my number, he would have it within hours. It was very scary. I had to leave my home and hide for a long time. I had no idea who he really was until he stayed over for a weekend and never left. The first 6 months were good. He was amazing. I was head over heels. Then one day he just did a 180 and showed his real self. Things went downhill so fast it was intense, to say the least. I wasn't allowed to be alone, even to use the bathroom. I could only talk on the phone on speaker, and I wasn't allowed to text. When I was finally free, I was so broken but so relieved. There is a silver lining, though. He is the reason I got sober and changed my life, and I will forever be grateful for that. The experience drove me to become a better person, to value myself enough to only allow good people in my life. Story 23. Had a Bumble date set up one time and met the guy at the pub. Nice pub, nice weather, decent atmosphere and beer. All the right components for a decent date. So he shows up, sits down, and we order to the table. The server comes with the drinks and I thank her. He just looks at her, expressionless. For quite some time, she and I both noticed how awkward it was. She glanced at me, then left. That was the very first interaction, and it already felt off. Nevertheless, I'm a social and sociable person, so I pressed on making light conversation and trying to create some kind of connection. But he was like chewing a house brick. It started raining, and his flat was just down the road. He asked if I wanted to transfer there and continue drinks and conversation. By this time, I had realized what I was dealing with and was confident I could handle myself if things started going south. Naive, I know, but curiosity won. We settled onto the sofa with wine in hand. What I hadn't realized was that his glass was water. An hour or so passed, and I was tired, drunk, and bored of my little experiment. Then out of nowhere, he asked if I wanted to have S. I said no, picked up my bag, and made to leave. All of the energy suddenly drained from the room, and I felt a massive drop in my stomach. For a man with blue eyes, his eyes suddenly looked almost black, like his pupils had dilated fully or something. Later, I read about how eyes can change in different psychological states. I know from my own bipolar disorder how my eyes change, and maybe it took one to know one. But as soon as he dropped the mask, the air shifted completely. Everything inside me geared up in sync, and in an instant I was running down the stairs and out into rainy Clapham. I was so relieved, like my heart only restarted once I hit the pavement. Since then, I've gone on to study psychology at university and other training programs in my pursuit of becoming a therapist, and I'm grateful for the experience because it taught me not to mess around when my instincts warned me. Because I found out, in hindsight and with knowledge, I'd say he definitely showed the majority of traits necessary for a diagnosis of sociopathy or psychopathy. I can't diagnose, but I'd tell a client to seek further evaluation if they presented like that guy. They're people with no empathy. Story 24. My ex opened his hand to me one day while I was rolling a blunt and said, "Here, take these." I asked him what it was since I had never done anything outside of smoking weed before and was especially apprehensive about trying pills off the street. "It's nothing, honestly. You'll just want to clean your room for a couple of hours," he said. I was hesitant, but I trusted that he wouldn't give me anything bad. This was earlier on in our relationship, about a year and a half of living together, before I had seen his real self. I didn't know it was meth-based fake ecstasy. I didn't know nothing would ever be the same after that day. Being heavily overweight and living with PCOS my entire life, I noticed meth was making the weight melt off in such a short time. I took that and ran with it. I went full throttle. I dropped from 185 to 104 in 3 months. I wouldn't eat for 4 days at a time, not sleeping those days either because of the drug abuse and the fact that my ex worked nights as a hotel security maintenance worker. We had to live on site in the hotel, and I worked until 10:30 p.m. every day. So sleep was pretty much impossible, even when I wasn't high. I juggled 9-hour shifts at Walmart with no sleep and no food for as long as my body could take, just so I could finally feel like I blended in, not to be the focus of the room, not to receive attention over my looks, but to feel normal. Even though I still have never been able to see myself differently than when I was overweight. My ex knew and watched all of my self-destruction in its rawest form, and I know it wasn't right for me to do that to myself with a partner who didn't care. I wanted to be free. I wanted to get clean, but he didn't. The walls around my personal life were starting to close in. My coworkers commented on my weight loss every time I came into work, and the paranoia I felt about others noticing my addiction led me to have a panic attack in front of my boss, which ended in me quitting my job. I told no one about my personal situation or that I was struggling. My ex told me that nobody would ever love me more than him, not even my mother, and that she was trying to brainwash me to keep me from him. Not long after that, I told him I thought I should go back to the hospital because of the state of my mental health and the fear that I might not be able to talk myself down anymore. He told me, "No, because who is going to take me to see my probation officer?" I eventually left 3 years later. I am in a healthier place now, and I don't know whether he would be considered a psychopath, but being able to feel nothing while watching your partner self-destruct the way I did, and even using their eating disorder as a way to keep them using drugs when they want to get clean, feels like a pretty heartless thing to do. He eventually admitted that he knew the pills had meth and coke in them, and he gave them to me willingly so I would start using. That way he could use again too. He also admitted he had been addicted for 5 years before meeting me, which was something else I didn't know. Story 25. I had a science teacher who loved to watch reactions, chemical and otherwise, from experiments. He loved to test hypotheses and learn from them. His eyes would focus in on something unexpected and try to analyze how and why the reaction occurred so he could recreate it and manipulate the variables. He had a pure passion and curiosity for understanding so that he could become a better scientist. Since school, I have noticed that same unsettling facial reaction, though more subtle, in certain people when they witness deep distress in someone else. While most in the room respond with empathy, confusion, or concern, a few display a fleeting expression of inappropriate fascination and those individuals have been the most frightening in my life. My grandfather was one of them. He seemed to take satisfaction in creating fear for my father when he was young. Later, it became clear that he had treated several relatives in harmful ways and regularly mistreated a step relative when her parent was not attentive. My father remembers very little of his own childhood, but he always knew deep inside never to leave me alone with his father. Story 26. I had a close friend throughout my childhood. It wasn't someone I could easily avoid either, since his parents and mine were on quite friendly terms and often helped each other out with rides. We had similar interests, so on the surface we actually got along quite well. But he was a bully and liked to put me and another friend down often. On one occasion, someone told him that my friend had asked a teacher if he could move seats in class because the psycho friend kept trying to disrupt him during lessons. Someone told him what my friend did, and instead of owning up to it, he told my friend he was sorry for distracting him. Sounds good, right? Nope. He then told my friend that it was me who said he wanted to move away. He did this during a sleepover, and it caused my friend to get really upset with me. I struggled to explain I had no idea about it. Another occasion pretty much sealed the deal with me wanting to distance myself from him. I was on a summer camp, enjoying the day with friends in the field. I laid down, looking up at the sky with my eyes closed, still chatting with them. Suddenly, he punched me in the gut while I was lying there completely unaware. Obviously, I was annoyed and yelled at him, but he brushed it off like I shouldn't have closed my eyes. I didn't speak to him for the rest of camp. When his parents came, he told them I was mad at him and being a baby. Even after I said he hit me, his parents didn't care either. Story 27. I had one come work for us for a short time. I'm in HR, so I onboarded the young man, and I also offboarded him when he quit. I remember him being odd, not in a specific way, but you could almost tell he rehearsed how to behave in social environments. He had trouble conversing and would sometimes say things out of turn that were strange or unsettling, making coworkers uncomfortable. I had to talk to him a few times about his behavior. One day I was speaking with him about an encounter with another employee. I told him he needed consent before recording or videotaping anyone, as required by state law. He looked me dead in the eyes and said, "Consent doesn't exist." I remember opening my mouth a few times to respond, but in the end, I just politely told him our conversation was over. He was dead serious, and I was very uncomfortable. He quit a few days later. A few months later, we found out he murdered a woman who had let him stay with her for a few nights since he was homeless at the time. Funnily enough, I had another man come work for us a few months ago who also told me consent didn't exist, and that the Democrats made it up when I spoke with him in a similar situation. He quit a few weeks later, but I processed his resignation immediately, gave him his 2-week payout on the spot, and made sure he never came back to the workplace. Story 28. I have conducted interviews in prisons as part of my job, and one of the tasks was gathering the prisoners, introducing myself, and politely asking them to participate. In the women's prison, the only one of its kind in my country, I encountered a sweet, docile woman who was so intriguing and sad at the same time that I wanted to talk to her. She saw that I was genuinely interested in her story about life inside and agreed to fill out the questionnaire and talk more. She kept touching my arm and calling me by my name. "Ms. E, Ms. E, I would like to talk to you some more." We were given strict rules to keep boundaries between us and them. So I said that all of the visits to the closed ward should be handled by someone else from my team. Still, she asked about me many, many more times. When wrapping up on the last days, one of the prison officers said, "It's interesting that you were so nice to him." She had a very distinctive name, and I immediately froze. She had murdered her mother and her sister. I later read her file. I had seen the pictures. I had been doing this job without thinking much about what these people had done to end up in prison. I didn't want it to cloud my judgment. But afterwards, I was much more aware. Story 29. I suspect that a boy I looked after for a year might be one. Out of nowhere, he once described to me that he had no feelings, was extremely bored with everything, and always acted as if he had emotions by imitating other people's facial expressions and gestures. He even explained how he had rehearsed his smile for the right situations. He also had a noticeable sadistic streak. He was highly manipulative, and it felt as if he wasn't really a child at all. When I looked into his eyes, it didn't feel like a child looking at an adult. Although I usually enjoy meeting children as equals, with him it felt strange and unsettling. He constantly tricked other children and took money from them through bets, games, or schemes. He also stole. His little sister, whom I also looked after, was violent, and more than once I picked her up with scratches across her face from him tormenting her out of boredom. He was always looking for ways to humiliate or cheat others for money, and he was only 11. He also constantly looked for ways to do things that normal people find horrifying. Shocking others seemed to excite him, like it was his way of fighting off boredom and emptiness. His aggression was especially bad when those around him were particularly human, kind, or empathetic. That seemed to annoy him the most. Story 30. I think I've met two in my life, both former bosses. The first one, I was new at the job, but directly under him. He constantly told me one thing and the other workers another, so I never had any real authority. He also wouldn't let any employees, including me, contact the higher-ups off-site. Instead, he claimed he had already spoken with them and that they weren't concerned. In my case, I was living in horrible on-site housing that was making me and my partner physically sick. When he finally got fired, the higher-ups inspected and immediately told us to move out because it was a health hazard. He absolutely hated clients, and I had to explain to him that other people have feelings and that most of our clients weren't stupid. They just hadn't experienced what we offered before. He had zero empathy when a client was abusive toward me and even took their side because they were a repeat customer. On top of that, he was physically abusive to his girlfriend in private the entire summer we worked together. Yet he was a master manipulator. Most employees were under his spell, and the higher-ups thought he was competent and a great boss. Eventually, he was banned from that organization statewide and prosecuted by his ex, though I don't know if he ever served jail time. The second one was also my boss, but the hierarchy wasn't clear at first. He managed to flirt with me and charm me. I was only 21, before I realized he was technically my supervisor. When I questioned it, he reassured me and manipulated me into believing I was special, that it was us against the world. He never asked personal questions or showed any real interest in me, just flattered my work ethic and convinced me to keep quiet about our relationship so I could build my own reputation. I'm pretty sure he cheated on his girlfriend with me and with another coworker. He was incredibly charming, well-loved in the organization, but carried a victim mentality, believing the world was against him. He painted the other coworker he'd been involved with as crazy. The last time we hooked up was coerced, and it left me with health issues and years of therapy, but I eventually managed to get him fired. Story 31. There were many signs. He would brag in broken fragments about having murdered people and disposed of their bodies. He showed me places and equipment he said he could use to hide bodies or trap someone where no one would find them. He even pointed out locations that connected him to a major terrorist attack. At first, I thought it was just drug-fueled nonsense, like he was a Walter Mitty living in fantasies. Then one night, he chased me around a remote field with a shovel, and I realized I had to escape, which I did. Later, I found out from people close to him that the bomb squad had been investigating him after the terrorist attack. Not long after I escaped, a friend who had given me shelter mysteriously died, and this man was seen hanging around at the scene. Then when new details about the terrorist attack came out in the news, they matched things he had told me, things I couldn't possibly have known otherwise. That's when I realized I had been in a relationship with a serial killer. I think the local police know, but he's an informant, so he only targets certain people. I changed my name, my entire identity, and never returned to my hometown. Story 32. I don't know if this actually counts because I don't know exactly who it was, but I discovered what they left behind. I grew up in a very dense suburban neighborhood, but we had pockets of little wooded areas in between neighborhoods that were only a few blocks wide. The kids used to run around in them. This was in the 90s, so you literally knew everyone within a 15-minute walk of your house. All the kids, all the neighbors, you saw them constantly from riding bikes, Halloween events, and all going to the same neighborhood school. So I know I definitely met this person at some point in my life. There was a small wooded area about a 5-minute bike ride from my house that had a brook. I loved going there by myself when no other kids were around. When I was 10, I was out there and came across something dead. I had grown up in the woods, spent my whole childhood camping, hiking, fishing, so I had seen lots of dead animals. But even at 10, I knew this was different. It was a small dog. It had been completely skinned, head to toe. All the flesh and muscle had been stripped from its face, leaving only the skull, but the rest of the body was untouched. Even at that age, I knew this wasn't the work of another animal. Someone had done this. Still, because I was young, I didn't fully grasp what I was seeing. I just knew it was wrong and terrifying. I ran away and never went back there. I never told anyone. When I was 18, I told my dad about it during a random conversation. By then, I understood what I had seen, that someone had tortured and killed that dog. My dad flipped out. "Why did you never tell us about that?" he yelled. He knew exactly what it meant, and that at the very least it should have been reported to the police. I just told him, "I'm sorry. I was 10. I didn't understand. I just thought it was scary." Story 33. They have no empathy and no soul. In the beginning, they will be whatever they think you need them to be so you'll like them and trust them. Once they feel comfortable, slowly, they'll start testing you. They'll do things that don't add up to their words and make you feel like you're going crazy. If you ever argue with them or call them out for something they've done that hurt you, there is no compassion or accountability. They don't care how it made you feel as long as they got the outcome they wanted. I was married to someone like this for 3 years, and it didn't fully dawn on me until one day I asked him about something from his past. I asked if he had ever felt bad about it, if he felt shame. He looked me right in the face and said, "No, I don't care." That moment was chilling. These are the most dangerous people because they lack feelings, emotions, shame, and guilt. All the things that keep most of society in line and prevent people from doing horrific things to one another. It's a scary realization. I kept thinking that he was the type of person who could hurt someone and then go out to lunch with friends like nothing happened. Story 34. One of our students was diagnosed with psychosis after he had left our campus. He was only 10 years old. His childhood had been tragic. His mother had cancer during her pregnancy, and after he was born, she had to immediately start chemotherapy. For the first 2 years of his life, she couldn't interact with him much due to her treatments. This deprived him of a normal start, with little human connection. His father had to work constantly to pay medical bills, so he grew up without consistent nurturing. From the very beginning, he was different. He had zero remorse and no understanding of consequences. On the very first day of school, he tried to choke a female student in front of her father. That alone sparked a huge legal battle between families. My wife and I were the heads of the school, and he respected us because we were the bosses. We also spoke to him calmly and never lost our tempers, so I was usually able to control him during the 2 years I taught him. But anyone he viewed as beneath him, including other teachers, he treated with cruelty. He would play rough with other kids until they cried, and instead of stopping, he would laugh about it. Eventually, it became clear we couldn't help him anymore. We weren't trained to handle this type of need, so his mother sought out a specialist. He wasn't behind in academics, but emotionally and socially, he was very different. A few months later, a famous TV show contacted us to film at our campus, since he had attended our private academy for 2 years. His mother had applied for help from a well-known child psychologist in Korea, and her story was chosen to be nationally broadcast. We declined to be part of the filming because he still lived in our town, and we didn't want other kids to view him differently and outcast him further. The show wanted us to pretend to teach a class for the cameras, but we knew if word got out, he would face even more bullying, not just from kids, but also from parents. In the end, the show followed the family for weeks. After careful observation, the specialist diagnosed him with psychosis, and he began receiving therapy. Story 35. My brother is a diagnosed psychopath. As a teenager, he was evaluated in a hospital after it was discovered that he had planned a school attack. He was kicked out and placed in a camp, and that's when he was officially diagnosed. He's lived his life without caring about consequences. He has multiple addictions, uses illegal drugs, and has been in and out of jail and prison for crimes ranging from violent assaults to white-collar scams. He abused my service dog, tampered with my food to make me sick, and deliberately started arguments to trigger my seizures. When I was a teen, he stabbed and nearly killed my biological father. Not a good man himself, but still. My brother has bragged about killing someone in another state, though he never gave a name or location. And of course, no one will prosecute based on hearsay. He goes out looking for fights just to release his anger. He finds violence funny. His emotions are fake. He lacks accountability and empathy. I didn't grow up very closely with him because he loved running the streets more than being home. But when my nephew died by suicide, something my brother was the catalyst for, and later when we lived together for 6 months, I finally saw him for what he truly was. He's dangerous, and that's why I now have a restraining order against him.